This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague, Conrad Black, writing at the National Post about Canadian matters. But also, I mentioned Conrad Black of the Scholars and Sense podcast on Apple Podcasts with our colleague, Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, and Bill Bennett of the many administrations, and now commenting on Common Sense in America. That podcast is highly recommended because they're witty. That's why. Not because they're profound, they're witty. And maybe witty and profound are the same thing. Good evening to you, Conrad. I take you immediately to a news item in Canada, and I'm very keen on how the Canadians are hearing this news. Dateline Calgary. Another Canadian oil pipeline has bitten the dust after TC Energy Corporation said it was walking away from the Keystone XL pipeline project, ending a decade-plus battle that pitted the energy industry against environmentalists as oil sands producers sought to export Canadian crude. TC Energy last month took a $2.2 billion write-down on the canceled project, which pushed the company to a loss in its most recent quarterly earnings. It is not a surprise. The Biden administration was very clear that this would be one of the early actions of the new president to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline. However, what does this mean for Canada? What does it mean for Alberta? How is this, Alberta, how is it being received in Canada? Good evening to you, Conrad.
Hey, good evening to you, John.
How is this news being received in Canada?
It varies. Certainly, it's a terrible disappointment in Western Canada, which has been hard enough hit by the restraints imposed upon it by the federal government, which is very ecologically avant-garde and has repeatedly expressed reservations about the ecological problems of pipelines, which, by the way, is nonsense. You know, it's by far the most of you know, ecologically safe and reliable way of transmitting oil, much more than doing it in trucks and trains. But in about half of Canada, the reaction is extremely disappointed. And in the rest of the country, it's a mixture between annoyance at the sort of stop and start way the American side through different administrations has proceeded. It got a fair bit of encouragement at times, highly encouraged by the Trump administration, now just abruptly shut down, a heavy blow to Canada. And then we feel I think I can speak for the majority of Canadians, that we've been shabbily treated here. I mean, we proceeded in good faith to build towards our own border and beyond for a pipeline that's now just a pipeline to nowhere. And so it's just wasted money. And we acted in good faith on what we took to be the assurance of the government of the U.S. that would be durable. So there's a disappointment there. I have to say that since Canadians as a whole are quite, as I say, environmentally aware and ambitious, and buy into a lot of the climate change theories, there is a consolation for some of them. In general, pipelines aren't good things, I think, and therefore they're consolable. So I would say that to homogenize the whole thing, the answer is Canadians are somewhat offended, generally disappointed, but slightly consoled by the fact that they have big doubts about pipelines anyway.
There's always politics. Is this a negative for Mr. Trudeau, who already has a minority government and is facing an election?
I think it depends if he does anything about it. If he sort of does take some appropriate retaliatory measures without any hyperbole and without anything insulting, just says, look here, we've been let down. And if that's the cavalier way the government of the United States is going to treat commitments that government has made, then, you know, we'll raise tariffs on the American digital imports or something like that. You know, I'd have to be more of a tariff policy wonk to say what was a proportionate reply. But if he does that, I think he can safely represent himself as just a victim of the caprices of American government, like the rest of the country at times. But if he just rolls over like a poodle and doesn't say anything and says, oh, well, we didn't really believe in shipping oil by pipeline anyway, and the hell with Alberta, then I would say he'd make a mistake doing that.
You write at the National Post about Bill 96, which you've educated me to understand is a product of Quebec nationalism seeking to, in some way, make people who do not speak French uncomfortable in Quebec, which is a beautiful yeah. part of Canada. You also report in your most recent column that the general Canadian public approach to this or response to this is indifference, a kind of pleasant indifference. Is that new, that Quebec's tantrum about its differentness is no longer being regarded as threatening to the rest of the country?
In fact, I think by now, since this problem has been there and bubbling below the surface, or much of the time right on the surface, for 50 years now, where there's been that separatist movement in Quebec, that's sometimes been the government of that province and sometimes the official opposition, the English Canadians are a little tired of it. You know, it's a little bit the boy who cried wolf too often, and essentially they feel that they've made a lot of concessions, and if the French aren't satisfied, they can leave, and with no great bitterness. If they want to go, they can go, but the English Canadians are tired of going all around this, you know, mulberry bush again and again. There is some concern, but in my opinion, not as much as it should be for our English-speaking compatriots within Quebec who are being shabbily treated. Now, they can take care of themselves. They're a prosperous group. They have certainly the option to leave, and a very large number of companies have moved their head offices from Montreal to Toronto over these decades. I think in general, English Canadians are more tired of it than anything else. I think that they should be more outraged than they appear to be at the shabby treatment of the English language. I mean, it has been a language whose speakers have had their rights and exercised their rights now for 260 years in Quebec, and it would be, in my opinion, a disgrace if, as a technical matter, they didn't have an absolute, unchallengeable right to use the English language in dealings with the provincial and federal governments, for example, in Quebec.
I ask again the political question. We have about a minute, Conrad. Is this an issue for Mr. Trudeau to speak to take advantage of, or is he also, like the rest, indifferent?
I think it is an issue where he's vulnerable. He said at the outset that Quebec could alter the Constitution unilaterally in areas that concerned it alone, which is fine up to a point, but technically Quebec hasn't actually ratified the Constitution. It functions within it. You see, the old Constitution of 1867 was heavily amended by this Prime Minister's father, Pierre Trudeau, in 1981, and Quebec didn't agree to that, but it functions within that anyway. So they're now purporting to ratify a constitution that they never have, in fact, subscribed to. And I think if Justin just shrugs his shoulders and says, well, it doesn't matter what they do, I think that could be a political liability for him. Though I must say the leader of the opposition so far hasn't shown any signs of picking up on it.
Conrad Black, Lord Black, is in Toronto reporting on Canadian affairs. Our best ally, our longest standing peaceful border, Canada, part of North American success. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bashman.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.